man from? Jamaica, yeah, man. And I love watching the Jerry Will Show. And guess what? It's time for the show to start. So grab a drink or a smoke. Yeah, man. And get ready for another great show. Okay, Jerry, push the start button, hey. I can't wait to watch this one later while I'm sitting on my fantastic beach here in Jamaica. Yeah, man. Oh, by the way, this show is brought to you by Kathy. Yeah, man. Hey, she makes the best coffee that keeps Jerry going. Hey, Kathy, you are amazing, you sexy lady. Hey, okay. Start the show. I man will see you later. Yeah, man.
Tonight's show is sponsored by Kathy. Hey, that's me. This is Goofy.
No, it's great. You are the sponsor tonight.
Oh. She makes the coffee that keeps us going.
See, that sounded great.
It still needs some work, Jerry. I'm going to go make some coffee. I still think it sounded goofy.
High on a mountainside near the asylum in the ghost town of Jerome, Arizona, you are listening to Jerry and Kathy Wills. Comments and views expressed on the Jerry Wills Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect those of Jerry Wills, the Jerry Wills Show, the affiliates or sponsors, or Channel U.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another fantastic edition of the Jerry Wills Show. And happy Wednesday night to everyone who's paying attention to what the day or time is. If you missed our last show, I feel very sorry for you. I won't lament. But you really did miss a good one. That was Dr. Robert Yoho. And if you did see it, you know how good it was. But I'll tell you what, as good as that was, if you're missing this show, oh, hell, you know, sorry, but there's something wrong with you. Give me a second here. It's time for a cup of chaos. Thank you, Kat.
You're welcome.
Our show tonight, we're jumping into the paranormal research, ghosts, electronic voice phenomena, all that stuff. Our guest is none other than the founder of Soul Sisters Paranormal, Christy Sumner. Yep. If you haven't heard of her, well, I don't know. Maybe you've been living under a rock. It's time to crawl out from underneath that rock and find out who she is, because this is a really intelligent and interesting person. So I'm going to bring her on. We're going to find out all we can about what she does, what she knows, and what her plans are. So it's with, It's with a lot of fanfare that I bring this person on. Folks, I want you to meet our next guest. Come on, work thing. Our next guest is Christy Sumner. How you doing, Christy?
I am fantastic, Jerry. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing better now that I have a cup of chaos. I saw you drinking yours, and it's like, oh, hell, I got to ask some.
But it wasn't Kathy made, so, I mean, I've got the substandard stuff going on here.
Well, we can send you the recipe. It involves coffee.
Okay, sounds great.
Yeah, and of course, you have to have the appropriate cup. Maybe we'll see to it you get the appropriate cup before the night's over.
That would be fantastic.
I think you probably need the appropriate cup because you deal with things that are certainly, I'm sure, at times chaotic. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Let's start with your background first, and then let's go into why are you doing this? Are you psychic or what's going on with you?
Okay. Well, yeah. So my name is Dr. Christy Sumner, and I'm the founder of Soul Sisters Paranormal. My background before I really started in the paranormal, or really investigating heavily into the paranormal, I was a senior consultant for a registered traveler program. And basically, my background is in biometric identification systems for access control and airport security. So I spent a lot of time running around the country helping to install those systems, really after 9/11, to install those systems and try to enhance aviation security. I was also a college professor teaching at the Metro State College of Denver in the aviation department, as well as the University of Central Florida. And so in 2014, my sisters and I, we all live in different parts of the country, and we decided to take girls' trips to meet up a couple times a year at just various locations. And in 2014, we went to Moundsville, West Virginia, which is where the West Virginia State Penitentiary is located. And we just happened to have a family friend that sat on the board of that facility. And he said, while you're here, why don't you spend the night in the penitentiary and see if you could communicate with any of our resident spirits? So we took him up on that offer. And we found that the things that we found were extremely compelling. It was a very rudimentary investigation for us. We had just a couple of voice recorders, a couple of digital cameras, but we were hearing doors slamming when we knew that no one was in those cell blocks. We heard men speaking when there wasn't any men present. So it really propelled us into wanting to research this further, wanted to find out, if we could, what this paranormal phenomena is, these unexplained occurrences are. And so we really committed ourselves to forming Soul Sisters Paranormal and really trying to elevate as best we could the subculture of paranormal into more of the mainstream. And so we did that by what we felt was taking a more professional approach in that we really research the locations, we research the technology, we go in with a healthy skepticism to the locations that we investigate. And we're an all-female team, and I say because we're an all-female team, I think we're more in tuned and empathetic to the spirits that we're communicating with. I'm not going to say that we're empaths per se or psychics per se. It's just that we go in with a different set of empathy than I believe a co-ed team or an all-male team would do.
That's interesting. Yeah, I invited you to stay. Did you have some history of doing ghost hunting or something of this nature before?
We had always expressed an interest in it. My sisters and I would watch the popular television shows of the time, and we'd say, you know, why didn't they ask this question or use these techniques or do this or that? And we decided that if we had the opportunity, we would jump at that chance to actually perform our own paranormal investigations. And coincidentally, our grandpa was a prison guard at Moundsville, West Virginia, in the West Virginia State Penitentiary when it was a prison. And then he became the chief of police of Glendale, West Virginia, the neighboring town. And he was chief of police for about 32 years in that location. So we have a lot of family members that are still there and a lot of people that are in the community there in Moundsville, West Virginia. So the family friend, he was really just that. He's known my family for years. And so when he found out we were going to Moundsville, he just said, hey, come on up and stay the night in the prison.
Yeah, it probably seems as has happened to me, and I'm sure many others. It's like, you know, hey, by the way, there's a haunted house over there. I dare you to stay in it. Do you think you can do it? And of course, I'd always go, yeah, sure, let's check it out. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
the things that you picked up there, though, that's really quite astonishing. Did you get recordings of some of this stuff?
We did. Like I said, the first one was really rudimentary. We just really kind of went in, as I said before, with this healthy skepticism. You know, is it really haunted? Are there really unexplainable things going on here? And so it was really more of an exploratory investigation for us more than anything, to your point, just to see if we could do it. And yeah. When we found these we captured these compelling unexplainable things, i.e. the footsteps, noises and voices that we couldn't explain in the moment, it really did solidify the fact that this is what we wanted to do. We wanted to research this further, not so much just from the paranormal standpoint, but also from that historical perspective, right? You know, in your opening intro, you have a segment on forgotten past, and we want to make sure that the past that we're investigating does not become forgotten. You know, we go into these locations for the historical perspective and to tell the historical narrative of these locations. That's the real primary focus. And then the secondary focus is to really take that narrative and couple it with the unexplained paranormal phenomena that we capture at these locations.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I'm like you. I've watched some of these, like the plumbers. I forgot who they are. I mean, Taps, that's it. They really got my interest. You know, is like, you know, well, is this because of there's a ground missing in this electrical circuit? You know, my background's in electronics engineering.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, you know, I didn't know that. Could that do this? But, you know, so many times, I mean, not always, because, I mean, they did have some pretty interesting stuff, no doubt. And, and I've been interviewed by one of them, and I've interviewed one of them. So I can't, you know, diss on them at all. But there were a few times, like, and I might have even mentioned it when I interviewed the guys, like, did you ever think of doing this or this or this? And it's like, well, you know, at the time, no. But now that you mentioned it, it's probably been a good idea.
And to your point, yeah, it is something that once you have one investigation, that's one investigation, right? It's completely different investigating, say, the St. Augustine Lighthouse and trying to compare that to, say, the Lizzie Borden House. They're two, quote-unquote, haunted locations, but they're two very different locations, both from that historical standpoint, but also from the reported hauntings or unexplainable occurrences that happen there. So while we have standard techniques, you know, doing research beforehand, before our investigation, really allows us to essentially custom that investigation to that location. And, you know, shows like Taps and Ghost Adventures and such, you know, they have their place. I think they've done a service to paranormal investigators in the fact that they allow the general public to know that we exist and that we are performing these type of services. But on the flip side, they completely do a disservice in the fact that those investigations are really not what happened in real life, at least for Soul Sisters Paranormal. Right. They go to a location for sometimes a week and they're investigating and they have a crew and a, you know, a whole litany of people that go with them and their entourage to make this show happen. We have five females that go in for anywhere from 8 to 15 hours. And it's all us really trying to do the research, to do the investigation and all of that. So there's really not the instant gratification that you would get from a television show really in what we do. But we feel that what we offer to our audience is a very, like I said, detailed historical perspective, and then kind of bringing our audience along with us on our investigation to really showcase what we did there, how we did it, and the compelling things that we can't explain from that investigation.
Wow, fascinating. So you're part historian as well with what you're doing.
Exactly.
I like that.
Exactly.
Because a lot of places I went to, of course, I went as a kid. Being a historian was not even a part. I would just go to a haunted house and get the hell scared out of you. But, you know, having some idea of the history of the place, I mean, what if you encounter something, just as an example, and you can't identify who that voice is or what this is all about? If you have a historical point of reference, then you can go, aha, this is what it's about. A good point in reference on that is this house that was near me that was an old Civil War hospital, and my friend Randy moved into it with his family. He was just a kid too, and it was so damn haunted that they had to leave.
Wow.
And so I looked into it. It's like, well, what was this? And I couldn't find much information. All I found was that it was a Civil War hospital. They did amputations, and people died, and people got sick and died, and it was just a big mess in this place. That's back in the hills of Kentucky.
Okay.
So, you know, doing this historical background has got to lend a lot of credence to what you're doing, because you're adding that to a phenomenon. It seems to me like that would be fantastic.
We like to believe it does. We like to believe that, you know, the research that we do beforehand and then after the investigation really does enhance our video and our episode that we put out about that investigation. Because without the history, there really is no paranormal. And to your point, if we can mirror or match up the historical narrative to some of the things that we're finding in the location, I think it just makes our case so much stronger. For example, we were at Fort Mifflin, which was a Revolutionary War fort in Philadelphia. And so it was a fort that was used not only in the Revolutionary War, that's when it was built, but it was used through the Civil War. It was used through the Vietnam War to house munitions, the Korean War, and so on, as well as the World Wars, obviously. But during the Revolutionary War, they had these subterranean rooms called casemates. And through our research, we found that one of those casemates was converted for a time into a solitary confinement cell, where this guy by the name of William Howe was tried for treason. He was put in the solitary confinement cell, and then he was subsequently hung at the fort. Hmm. And so because of our research in that, we really wanted to take some items to show that we knew he was there, respect him for what happened to him, and to kind of see if we could get his story. So because of that, we took what we felt somebody in solitary confinement would want. So we took some water, we took a cigarette, we took some bread, and we left it in that casemate for him, along with a video camera, a laser grid, and some recording devices. And so at one point during the night, it was just myself and my co-investigator, Cara. And so we walked into this casemate, and it's a very small room. It's just accessed through one doorway that's about 7 feet underground, and only about four or five people could comfortably stand in there. So the two of us were in there, and I said, "Did you see the stuff that we left you?" And we got a loud male voice saying, "Thank you." Very audible. We all heard, both of us heard it in the moment. Everything that we had recording captured that. And so in my mind, that the fact that we acknowledged him as a person that he once was, and kind of giving him things that we thought he needed, he was willing to communicate with us on that level. And I think we got that because we were taking the time to do the research beforehand.
You know, that's an interesting point you brought up, Christy. You know, a lot of people look at these apparitions, ghosts, if you will, as a thing, not as a person. Mm-hmm. And in so many of the instances when I've encountered them, of course, I've never thought of them as a thing, but I know other people do. They're just a damn ghost. But you acknowledge them as a person. You start getting that feedback from them. Mm-hmm. At first, you know, they're going to be pretty surprised, from my experience. They're pretty surprised that they're acknowledged in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then if you can hear them, like you did in this case, and you say, "You're welcome," or whatever, they're not alone anymore. And that's one of the things that I've learned about the ghosts that I've encountered, is sometimes they feel so alone, and they're just not able to just reach out and touch anyone. They're just alone. It's like a hellish existence for them. Mm-hmm. Being able to have that reciprocity, you know, that would be very important. And it's probably why you've had such great success, is because I'm sure you do that.
And to your point, we absolutely do. You know, for us, there's no point in going in with bravado. There's no point in going in with provoking, because that to us is counterproductive to what we want to do. Every investigation, if you watch any of our episodes, every investigation, you'll hear us say, "We're here to tell your story. We want to hear your story." And that is legitimately why we are there. If any spirit wants to communicate with us or interact with us in any way, that becomes part of their story. And so we try to get names, we try to get dates or anything that we can really connect with that narrative, that historical narrative. But in some cases, you know, we may not get that, but it's a part of their story, part of their existence. And we always lead with that when we go in these investigations. We'll introduce ourselves and we'll say, "We're here to talk to you, not provoke you." If we go into a location, say, that is a little bit darker, like a prison or a jail, and we come across something that we feel doesn't want to communicate with us, that's absolutely fine. We tell them we're going to leave a voice recorder in this space. We're going to leave a night vision video camera in this space. If you want to communicate with us tonight, this is the method to do it. Otherwise, we're going to leave you because this is your space. This is your home. And we have other areas on this property that we can investigate. So for us, it's not about bravado. It's not about going in with chest thumping or saying, you know, I'm not going to believe you're here unless you throw this chair across the room. That's really not how we operate. So for us, there is that respect level to really treat them as the human being that they once were. Because, you know, you go through life with the want to be acknowledged, to your point, right? And so nobody wants to go through life thinking that they're invisible, and spirits are the same way for us. You know, they don't want to be there to be invisible. And if we can help them relay their story in any way, that's what we feel our job is.
And I have watched a few of your videos, and I understand, you know, exactly, you know, as you're putting it out there for folks to hear. Folks, if you've not watched any of her videos, you really should. Where can they watch them at, Christy?
At our website at www.soulsistersparanormal.com. We're also on YouTube under Soul Sisters Paranormal.
Yeah, I think it's, I started on your site and then I migrated over to YouTube. Mm-hmm. Did, you know, full screen and listened and watched very intently. Kathy and I both, it was just fantastic. You guys do a great job. It really is a good job you do.
Thank you.
There have been places I've gone to I felt rather uncomfortable. And I really didn't have any of the, you know, the stuff you see in the movies, the scratches or, well, actually there was one time a guy tried to poke me in the eye. But I saw him. Mm-hmm. But have you gone into a place and was like, oh, I've got to get the hell out of here? Have you ever had that experience?
Honestly, we haven't. You know, the when we get into what I call investigation mode, really to us, it becomes about that scientific exploration and that telling of that historical narrative. And so when we go into these locations, we really kind of go into the mindset that we're here to communicate with those spirits. And we kind of just kind of go into that zone, if you will. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, because we don't provoke or go in with any type of negative intentions, I think that the respect level we give is also the respect level that we get. And as I said before, if we feel something that is darker, I'm not going to go demonic or anything like that. That's not anything what I'm talking about. I'm just saying a darker spirit as somebody wasn't so great in life, like a jail or a prison, we'll leave that space and leave that to them. And so again, because of that, I think we have been very fortunate that we haven't felt anything negative. You know, we haven't run out screaming at all. We do set our boundaries when we go in and say, unless we give you permission to do so, you're not allowed to touch us, you're not allowed to harm us in any way or come home with us or attach to us in any way. And again, I think we get that respect level because we go in with a respect level.
I was watching a show, not sure what it was on, but it was about some extremely haunted places. And one of these places, I told Kathy, I said, when we're out traveling, we really need to stop by some farmhouse, Oklahoma, Kansas. Do you remember that, Kat? And the things that went on there were so absolutely scary. Mm-hmm. You know, they interviewed the people who lived there and did the story upright. And it was like, nobody wants this place. Nobody will go in here and spend the night, yada, yada, yada. And I was thinking, talking to Kathy about it, I said, you know what, I'd go in there and spend the night. Well, you know, I mean, people were coming out with scratch marks on them and bleeding and, you know, hair turned white. You know, it's like right. Some of the craziest shit you ever heard. And I was thinking, I'll go in there. I'll face whatever this is. I'd like to find out what the story is. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about something like that?
I think if you're going in with the right intentions, you know, again, for us, it's about telling that story and to really say, this is why we're coming to approach you. This is what we're trying to do. And I think the people that have those negative encounters, go in with the mindset of they are going to find something creepy, or they just want to be scared on the Friday night, or they go in with, you know, a Ouija board. And not that I'm saying a Ouija board is bad. We don't use Ouija boards, again, because of the connotation behind them. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go in with an attitude of, I'm just going to get scared, I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to face this thing, whatever it is, I think you're going to be met with that type of resistance, rather than going in and saying, okay, this is what we're trying to do. Now, that being said, if we were to go in there and encounter something like that, where we feel that it doesn't want us there, then that's fine. That is their space. We will back up from that location and really not engage with that. As I said before, we'll leave recording devices if we have to, or if that opportunity to present itself, but because we're not looking for negative, to this point, we haven't found negative.
No, good. That's very good. You'd be a good one to take along if we decide to go there.
Sure.
I'm interested. I'm interested in the scientific aspect of it. Mm-hmm. With the psychic aspect of it, I mean, there's no proving to me about ghosts. I've seen them and I've conversed mm-hmm. with them, so it isn't like I need to know. I already know.
Right.
But when it comes to things like this, you know, where it's like a little sketchy, I have a scientific mind. I want to know more. And if there's mm-hmm. actually something there that's like this, then I want to know what is it.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's just me. But have you ever been to Jerome, Arizona?
I have, but not as an investigator.
Okay.
I was out there on a family trip.
We lived there 3.5 years, almost 4 years. And people say it's haunted, and they have their cute little spook walk. You know, you pay your money, and you go walking around, and they show you the haunted places. Mm-hmm. Well, we lived there. And I can tell you, there are some of those areas that definitely have some ghosts there. I was doing a special with Fox TV up there, and it was for Halloween. Mm-hmm. They're going to air it on Halloween, this ghost house theme. So, okay. we encountered a few things during that interview with them. You know, air getting really cold, buzzing, you know, in their fingers. I said, the guy's standing right there. Just run your fingers in like this and come back again. And they could feel the buzzing on their fingers, and then the air got super cold. When you are doing your investigations, do you get those physical sensations as well?
Sometimes, not all the time. There are times where you can say something like, and this is really with children's spirits, I've found that you can say, like, you can touch my pant leg, or do you want to hold my hand? Or my younger sister has longer hair, you know, do you want to touch her hair? And we have had those things happen where, you know, you feel your pant leg being pulled, or something brushing your hand, or a breeze running past you. To your point, we really try to look for the scientific explanation behind that. So say something does breeze past me, then my immediate next look is to see if there is an air conditioner on, or a fan on, or a window open, to validate just that personal experience. And then if we have anything in the area, such as, you know, electronic meters or whatever, that we use during our investigation to see if that has alarmed or indicated in any way. But there have been some physical feelings. Like I said, being touched is the most prevalent. Noises are another big thing. We were in Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, and this was the second time we had investigated that location. This is in Petros, Tennessee. And we were on a collaboration investigation with Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations. Mm-hmm. She's somebody in the field that we highly respect. So we were on this investigation with her and her camera guy, Josh. So there was five of us in this location investigating. And as we were walking down one of these corridors, there was a loud smack on the wall, like somebody just took their hand and smacked it against the wall.
Wow.
And when we turned around, we all went quiet, and we turned around and Josh is filming, and we didn't hear anything in the moment. But when we went back and listened to the audio after the smack and Josh turning around, we captured a man's voice saying, "I warned you." And so wow. that type of manifestation of slapping, of noises, of footsteps, of door slamming, we've captured things like that as well.
And had he warned you up to that point that you're aware of?
Not that we're aware of. We had, again, a lot of what we do is, or a lot of the evidence that we put out there as unexplainable is captured on our stationary equipment. So stationary voice recorders, stationary night vision video cameras. So when we went back and looked at the evidence before that slap happened, we captured some noises, some male voices in that corridor, as well as some door slamming. So we kind of attribute that to the quote unquote, I warned you. But again, it wasn't anything that was malicious. We've never felt anything malicious towards us in any of these investigations. It was just like a, hey, I warned you.
Huh. What a thing. Mm-hmm. Wow. So what is the range of area that you go to when you're going to do an investigation, and how often do you go and do your investigations?
Well, up until last year, you know, COVID kind of put a damper on a few things. But sure. Up until last year, we were conducting what I call commercial investigations. So these are locations such as Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, the St. Augustine Lighthouse. We were going on approximately 4 to 5 of these investigations a year. And we've gone all over the country. We've been, you know, we're based in Florida. I'm in Tennessee now, but we've gone to Iowa, to Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Massachusetts. So we go all over the country doing this. It's again one of those things that to us, if we can go to these locations and one, have a very tactile experience with these historical locations, you know, i.e. I've touched the doorknob that Lizzie Borden has touched. I've run up the stairs of the St. Augustine Lighthouse that was built in 1879, right? To have that tactile historical experience and to couple that with unexplained paranormal experiences, you know, that's what we absolutely love to do. So for us, the travel, the expense, you know, the self-funding of all of this is absolutely worth it.
Yeah, well, the self-funding is a thing. I mean, Kathy and I self-funded ourselves for 20-some years looking for lost cities in South America. So, you know, there's a great deal of joy in being untethered to someone who's calling the shots.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So do you, you know, it looks like this COVID thing is kind of winding down. Do you have any places on your list that are like, oh, hell, I really need to go there?
Well, next month we will be at the USS North Carolina in Wilmington, North Carolina. This is a battleship that has a very long history, so we're very excited to be going there. You know, hopefully we'll get to go international at some point. I know somebody on your Facebook page asked if we were going to go to England at some point. Yes. England, I would love to get back to. I've been there numerous times, but not as an investigator. So to go back as an investigator to spend some time there, England and Ireland is absolutely on my bucket list. But you know, to find these locations just here in the U.S. that we can go to that not many people know about, and to be able to tell that story and share that story with our audience, that is really what we love to do. So, for example, in the town that we grew up in Florida, it's called Ocala, and in 1935, it was the site of the shootout between Ma Barker and members of the FBI, and it really led to the culmination of the end of the gangster era of the 1920s and 1930s. And so this house in 1935 was in the spotlight for about 6 to 8 months. J. Edgar Hoover went down to Florida to visit this location, so a lot went on, but when you tell people about it now, nobody knew the history of that house. Nobody knew the significance of that location. And so when we went in 2018, we were actually the first team to investigate that house, that shootout house called the Ma Barker House. And we were interviewed for that. You know, we were on radio, on TV, in the newspaper. And we had so many people telling us, you know, thank you for doing this story. I never knew this was here. I've lived here my whole life, never knew this happened. And so those are the things that we absolutely love to do, to bring that historical narrative in, couple it with some unexplainable paranormal evidence that we find, and really bring that, again, to that larger audience.
What about Native American sites? Whether it would be, you know, Custer's Last Stand, or, you know, it's the one that comes to mind. But, I mean, there are many, many places that aren't the conventional, you know, late 1800s through the 21st century, you know, that 140, 40-year period, let's say. You go back even farther back, even than the Civil War. Because I've seen things with the Civil War that were just, like, surprising.
Right.
But what about, you know, these other sites where there were people? We call them Indians, Native Americans, whatever. Have you ever gone and investigated anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, we have, absolutely. So there's locations in Central Florida where the Seminole Indians, the Seminole Indian Wars were fought, some down there. And so we've been to some of those locations there in the Ocala National Forest, and we've captured some compelling things, again, that we can't explain. We typically, when we go to some of these locations, and we know that there's been Native American influences in the region, we will absolutely bring that into our investigation. So we will play Native American chants or bring up Native American words to try to, again, elicit a response, not from people who were, quote unquote, there during an event, but further to your point, further back. So, for example, Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, right? There's a large Native American influence in the Appalachian Mountains there, where that penitentiary is located. So we didn't just try to focus on the inmates that were in that penitentiary from 1896 to 2009, but also prior to that, the Native American influence. So we would play Native American chants. And I think that that does draw out a different type of energy. It does draw out those that say, okay, most people focus on this event or this time period, but here we were as well. And I do think, you know, that's a great technique to try to bring out some of those spirits that want to tell their story as well. Moundsville, West Virginia, where the West Virginia State Penitentiary is located, literally 50 yards from the entrance to that facility is a large Native American burial ground. So that is the thought that mound and the spirits there have an influence on the hauntings, the quote-unquote hauntings at the West Virginia State Penitentiary. So you cannot negate or forget to try to communicate with those spirits as well.
Wow, yeah, that's interesting. You know, and it throws, it seems to me anyway, my own experience, it throws a whole different spin on things, because we're used to dealing with people who speak our language, that know our customs and so on. A good case in point, Kathy and I found ourselves in Guanajuato, Mexico. And when the folks there discovered, you know, some things about me, about ghosts and whatnot, they said, oh, can you help us, please? Because they're redoing this old fort. And I don't remember what the story is about the fort or even what the name of it is, but it's in Guanajuato. It's a rather well-known place there. And the workers were having all kinds of trouble because wheelbarrows were being turned over, things were being built or disassembled the next day, and it was just generally very, very haunted. Well, there was all kinds of bad stuff that happened to the people that were in that fort during this war. They were surrounded and just massacred. So I went there, and of course, this is a spooky damn place in the daytime, and at night... well, it's one of those places that you just look at and go, what the hell was I thinking when I said it? But, you know, you're dealing with people. I was dealing with people who spoke Spanish, and they didn't know English, and they didn't know that they were dead. It was quite a mess. I can tell you the whole story sometime if you want to hear it, but,
sure.
When you're dealing with Native American issues like this, you've got really the same kind of situation. How do you communicate with them, and how do you say, yeah, well, make this noise? And they're like, I wonder what she said.
And no, to your point, you know, it is kind of interesting because you do have those television shows or, you know, those people that are investigating that go to a different country and yet they're speaking English, right? And so it is something that you have to take into consideration. You know, for example, when we were at the St. Augustine Lighthouse, you know, the St. Augustine was founded by the Spanish in 1565. So when you investigate the lighthouse, you just can't speak English. You have to try to communicate with any Hispanics that may be in the vicinity as well. So I don't speak Spanish, but we had some words that we knew. And so we were routinely yelling those out at the St. Augustine Lighthouse. And because of that, I think we did get a response. You know, there was a couple phrases that we said and we had a door slam. And so to your point, you just can't you just can't pigeonhole yourself into just looking at this location because of this time frame or because of this event. You really need to look at it holistically, and that's where research comes in.
Have you found in some of these places that some are more psychically active than others?
There's been locations that we've gone to where we've captured so many things that we can't explain. And let me just back up a little bit. The reason I say that, I call it the unexplained, is when we go into these locations, we go in with this very, like I said before, very healthy skepticism. And the first thing that we do is we try to debunk any other paranormal or haunting claims. So we'll go in during the day and we will look for environmental factors that could cause somebody to think that there is a paranormal phenomena going on at that location. So we will look at airline traffic, train traffic, vehicular traffic, light pollution, noise pollution, any of those sources that we can rule out and say, okay, we think it's this, not something paranormal. And so when we do that, we go into these investigations with as much control of the environment as we can. And there have been locations that when we control for these things, we control for everything that we can control for, we are still left with what I call unexplainable. Very rarely will I call them hauntings or paranormal, because if somebody can come behind me and say, well, I think it's this, this, or this, I want to have that dialogue, because I don't want to put out anything out there that's false. So when I say, you know, we've captured so many unexplainable things in this location or this location, that's really what I'm referring to. It's those things that after we controlled for what we can control for, we can't explain. And so when we went into some place like Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, there were so many things that we couldn't explain in that moment that for us was extremely compelling. It just really built on the narrative that there was something paranormal going on in that location. So Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, the Lizzie Borden House are great examples of locations that we've gone to that we just can't explain what's going on there. The Grand Old Lady Hotel in North Carolina, that was another location. Great investigation location. It was a collaboration with Miranda from Ghost Biker, and it was just Miranda, my twin sister Jenny, and I in this location for the entire weekend. We had complete control of the environment, but yet there are things that are happening, such as tables being overturned, doors being shut, names being called, our equipment alarming all throughout the weekend that we cannot explain. So those are some of the locations that I think are probably the most compelling with regard to paranormal evidence.
Wow. Well, speaking of the Grand Old Lady Hotel, you sent me a video clip. Would you mm-hmm. like us to show that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Your audio will be on, but go ahead.
Okay. So, again, this location is fantastic. It was built in 1905 as part of the railway system through Balsam, North Carolina, and it's a three-story hotel, and the owner really wanted to maintain it in the glory that it was back in the early 1920s, 1930s. So it's grand sweeping staircases, hardwood floors throughout. There's no TVs in any of the rooms. There's no radios in any of the rooms. She wanted it to be more of a communal atmosphere. And so when we investigated there, as I said, Miranda and Jenny and I had complete control of the environment. We were the only three people on the property for an entire weekend. And so Miranda, under Ghost Biker Explorations, she conducted her investigation on Friday night, and Jenny and I conducted our investigation on Saturday night. And Saturday night, when we were there, so Miranda was with us because we stayed in the hotel, obviously. So that night, on Saturday night, we all decided to stay in one suite that is adjacent to the most haunted hallway in the building, reported haunted. It's called Henry's Hallway. And so this suite, it's a large suite. It has an interior room and an exterior room. And the doorway to the hallway is in the exterior room. And that's the only way to get into the hallway. So we had a night vision video camera on the inside of the door and a night vision video camera on the outside of the door. And we had recording devices inside the rooms. And so we can tell that there's nobody else in this space and on this property that night because we had cameras up all over. And so in this clip, what has happened is we all went to bed. So Jenny and I are in the interior room. Miranda, who you'll see, is in that exterior room closest to the door. And so once we said goodnight, about 15 minutes later, we captured this EVP And again, it's something that we can't explain.
All right, let's check it out, folks.
Did y'all hear that?
Yep.
What did that sound like?
That's what I thought.
Did y'all hear that?
Wow.
So again, it's one of those things that we have no explanation for. Again, we know that there's nobody else on the property, but yet we're capturing this voice on the audio recorder.
What kind of an audio recorder are you using?
Just a Sony digital voice recorder. That's the ones that we have. And it wasn't just those voice recorders. The cameras that we had set up, the night vision cameras, captured it. And we had those throughout that hallway. And so it was a loud voice. Again, something that we couldn't explain. And this had just come off a very active night for us. As I said before, we had a table overturn that we couldn't explain. Unfortunately, because there's 100 rooms there, we didn't have cameras in all of the rooms, but in one of the guest rooms, we heard a crash and we all went running and a table had been flipped totally over. Unfortunately, we didn't capture that on video, but it was a personal experience that we all had. Our equipment that night, we had what we call REM pods. We had positive responses on that. Our K2 meters, again, that measure electromagnetic energy, they were alerting during the night. So all of those things just really built a case for us that something unexplainable is happening in that hotel.
You know, I've been in a house in New York, Chappaqua. Mm-hmm. Kathy was there, too. She had this happen to her. Scared the living hell out of me. There was a cat ghost in there. And one night, these two kids showed up in the room. I turned over and there they are looking at me, but they didn't have any eyes. That happened to Kathy as well, and the space between me and the wall was no more than 8 inches.
Wow.
So it's just, you know, so Kathy and I are there. I stayed there many, many different times. The friend's house, and one night she had all these fold-up chairs because in the big room she'd have. I was doing lectures there and talking to people there.
Okay.
Anyway, the middle of the night, one night, we were just laying there in bed. It's like, I don't know, 11:30 thereabouts. All of a sudden, it sounds like someone took about 10 of those folding chairs and just dropped them on the damn floor. It was so loud. It freaked us the hell out.
Of course.
You know, anything is surprising like that, Will.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped up, ran out into the room. None of the chairs were moved. Nothing was moved. Everything was just fine. Could not explain it. And the gal who owned the place, she was just right over there in her room. The door closed. She didn't hear anything.
It is interesting, you know, some of those noises that are happening in the moment that are, like I said, there have been times where we've been absolutely startled. I mean, you can't be in some of these locations
and
have a door slam, or to your point, have chairs fall over and not be startled. But, you know, to us, that's absolutely fascinating. It's like, let's try to find out what the cause was.
How did that happen?
Get the story behind it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know how, and the damn ghost cat pissed me off. She had cats, and I'm in the room by myself, and the moon's coming in the window, and I'm laying there, and here comes this damn cat. Well, I made sure there were no cats in the room,
mm-hmm.
so I don't want a cat in the same room with me. I'm not a cat person, but I'm laying there. All of a sudden, cat jumps up, walks over the window, looks, purrs. Walks on over here, and I'm going, God damn it. I thought I got the cat out of here. Lights on. I go looking. There is no cat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told her the next morning. I said, do you know you have a ghost cat? She says, oh, yes, that's so-and-so. He died last year, but he's still here. Wow. It's like, oh, my God. I never...
Thanks for letting me know.
That was my first ghost cat. How about you? Any animals you ever run into, that sort of thing?
You know, I have one time. I had a dog, and we've always grown up with dogs. I mean, I grew up on a farm, so we've always had animals. And, you know, through life, right, you lose animals and that. And but I had a dog, Amelia, and she was only 2 years old. And the day prior, she had had a seizure. And I picked her up. I raced her to the vet. And so they did some tests, and they couldn't find anything. And I'm like, something is wrong with her. Something is wrong. And they said, well, just send her home. We're going to send her home. If she has it again, bring her back, and we'll do some tests, neurological tests on her and such. And so took her home, and the next morning my mom, I was living with my parents at the time, and my mom came in and said, you know, Amelia didn't make it last night. And I was inconsolable, and so I ran outside and I threw myself on the grass. I'm crying. My other dog, we had three other dogs, they were all around, and I look up, and I saw Amelia just running across the yard. I'm like, Mom, there she is. And Mom's like, what are you talking about? And, you know, the other dogs were all there. And I know I saw her. Absolutely know I saw her. But, you know, it's obviously one of those personal experiences that you just can't really explain. But, yeah, so that's the one time I've actually seen what I know is a ghost dog.
Yeah. So the ghost cat thing just threw me. I was not expecting a ghost cat. Mm-hmm. Do you think of yourself as being psychic?
Honestly, I don't. I do believe that, because I'm a twin, I do believe that Jenny and I have a different relationship than most siblings. The fact that we together have an empathic sense about us, between us, but I don't proclaim to be a medium or psychic or an empath. It's just one of those things that I don't profess to be, but I think that the relationship that Jenny and I have really lends itself to interesting investigations when we go on investigations together.
Oh, sure.
And I think we can use that between us, and it just kind of, I think, brings out a little bit different energy, if you will.
Well, if you're empathic with your twin, and I've heard this from so many twins, I mean, it just seems like a cumulative effect between you. Right. You know, without going into lengthy explanations or descriptions, but I understand exactly what you're talking about. And that's really neat. Where is Jen tonight?
She's down in Orlando. So she's down, she works at the University of Central Florida. So she's down there tonight.
Oh, okay. I'll have to tell her hi for us.
I'll definitely do it.
So I've got another one here. We were talking about Lizzie Borden. Mm-hmm. Let's play this other video clip. Okay. I mean, these clips you sent, by the way, are just damn interesting.
well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, this one is fascinating for a couple of reasons. The first one is, well, this is at the, obviously, Lizzie Borden house, where in 1892, you know, Andrew and Abby Borden were killed. They blamed Lizzie Borden for it. She was arrested. She was acquitted. So it remains an unsolved murder. And so when we investigated there were five of us, four Soul Sisters Paranormal, and again, Miranda from Ghost Biker joined us on this one as well. And this one is interesting because when we start our investigations, even before we have our suitcases upstairs or whatever, as soon as we cross the threshold, we've got voice recorders going because you never know what you're going to capture just speaking, sure. Right? And so in this instance, Kara and Jenny were sitting in the parlor where Andrew Borden's body was found in 1892. And we had already set up a voice recorder on the mantle of the fireplace that's in that room. And so they're just talking. Jenny and Kara are just talking about the day, and then they started talking about the difference between the Villisca axe murder house, which we had investigated prior that year, and the Lizzie Borden house. And so they're just talking, and you hear Kara say, either way, it would be a horrible way to die. and we captured a male's voice at that time. Now, the interesting thing is, one, it's a male's voice. There's no men in the house. And two, it's intelligent. It's responding and giving an answer to Kara's statement, which is, again, fascinating to us.
Wow. What was the murder all about anyway in Lizzie Board? Is that axe murder also?
Yeah, so in 1892, Lizzie was living with her father, Andrew, and her stepmother, Abby, and her sister was there as well. And there was also a maid in the house, Bridget Sullivan. And the reports are, well, Andrew and Abby were ended up bludgeoned to death. And because Bridget Sullivan and Lizzie Borden were in the house at the time, they blamed Lizzie Borden for the murder. Personally, I think she did do it, but she was put on trial, and there were 12 men in the jury box, and they pretty much said that we don't believe a woman could create create this heinous crime, right? Could commit this heinous crime,
right?
Because Andrew Borden was struck 11 times in the head; his face was just completely mangled. And then Abby Borden was killed; she was struck between 13 and 15 times with an axe to her face as well. And so, yeah, so they both died in the house. The reports are that the house is completely active with paranormal phenomena, and it was an investigation that was really compelling. Again, for us, because we did capture this EVP that you'll play in a minute. We captured children's voices. A lot of our equipment was going off that night that we couldn't replicate through environmental factors. And so for us, it was a very interesting investigation.
Wow. Okay, folks. Here it is.
This is our second
murder. Right. Well, let's go. We have to do stuff.
That just seems
like a
whole way to go.
Yeah.
This is our second
murder house. Right. Well, let's go.
We have to do stuff. That just seems like a whole way to go.
Yeah.
This is our second murder house.
Right. Well, let's go. We have to do stuff.
That just seems like a whole way to go.
Wow. It's a bit of a whisper.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, for us, when we sit down and listen to the audio, you know, you're just essentially kind of listening behind the voices, if you will. And, you know, when you start to kind of get in the habit of listening that way, to us, it was pretty clear. And so some of the things that we have out there, they are whispers, but again, compelling evidence for us because there was nobody else in that room that could whisper the phrase "it was."
Kathy had something to say. What'd you say, Kathy?
Well, when we played the videos before the show,
yeah,
they weren't echoey like that. I was just curious. We might have something on that.
No. The last part was an enhanced audio version.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, we played these earlier, and Kathy says it sounded like, you know, a little bit of echoey there, but the audio enhanced, it really brings things up. Have you ever had anyone that's really good at audio take and dissect the audio and just really refine bits and pieces of it?
Well, I have an audio software, but... And for me personally, and this is just for Soul Sisters also, we don't run our audio through any type of audio software. We will present it in the raw. And the reason we do that is because we don't want anybody to come back and say, well, you've cleaned it, you've compressed it or done this or pulled it out or something like that.
Right.
So what we put out there, and we put in at the beginning of the videos, we do say it's easier to hear this with headphones on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the best way to listen to some of our EVPs. But for us, it just really, it kind of lends credence to the fact that we don't put that through any type of audio software. And that's just how we operate. We will amplify the audio, i.e. we turn up the volume,
yeah,
and that's pretty much the only thing we'll do to our audio clips.
Well, that was it's a horrible way to go. It was.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Good,
yeah.
Heavens. Yeah, I had something else I was going to ask you, and now I'm just so taken with that. My mind's racing on how to run it through my equipment and make it just, you know, pop. But, holy mackerel. This is so interesting. Where are we at on time anyway? Let me just check and see. We're at an hour. You want to take a break? We can come back?
Sure. Yeah. We can take a break.
We've got four more video clips, folks. And we'll go through those. And maybe I'll think of what I was going to ask you, you know, in the break. Kathy brought me another cup of chaos, so I'm all set for the next hour. And
a few comments.
A few comments?
Mm-hmm.
On Dix's. Yep. Well, I just have to reload it. Let me just see what we have here for comments. I'll take a look at that, too, during the break, and we'll go over that when I get back. Folks, don't go away. We'll be back in about, I don't know. How long do you think we should be gone? Let me think about it for a second. I suppose maybe we'll be gone about 10 minutes. And during that amount of time, you folks, go ahead, have a whatever, and we'll be back and find out more about the research that Christy Sumner and her ladies are doing. I can't wait for you guys to hear these, to see these other clips. My God, they're really good. So anyway, don't go away. Make sure you come back, and we'll be back here in just, I don't know, 10 minutes, okay? See you soon. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a comment. Subscriptions and your comments cost nothing, but it really helps us out a lot. To hear the entire interview you were just listening to, and many, many other amazing interviews within our archives, please visit jerrywillsshow.com and become a member. Your membership supports our ongoing broadcasts. That's jerrywillsshow.com. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this program.